Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Man, great day. Great night yesterday. You need any more juice, Seth? Holy smokes. The Rockets.
I know. The Rockets are doing, everything.
Big things. Crazy
Okay. So, in order of most recent, the Rockets signed Clint Capella, which was, in a weird way, one of the biggest surprises of the offseason. So, and before that, they'd signed Dorian Finney-Smith, which was a somewhat expected move. But, we wake up this morning with the Rockets doing, they added a superstar, but also managed to maintain their depth and kind of create the perfect environment that I would have wished for going into this offseason.
Yeah, I think it's gone really, really well. And like you, after adding Durant, I thought, okay, well, now's the time to play in the margins a little bit. And that's exactly what they've done with Dorian Finney-Smith and Clint Capella. Dorian Finney-Smith, you know, a 3-and-D guy. We knew we were going to miss, you know, Dylan Brooks to some degree, but now you get a guy that's maybe a little less of a head case in Dorian Finney-Smith, and in fact a better shooter, defensive guy that can guard multiple positions. That's going to be interesting to see how just he's employed. And Clint Capella, he's a guy, the former Rocket, that I've heard mentioned a time or two this offseason, but kind of like Harden and Westbrook. And any other former Rocket that you think, like, well, now that you got the superstar in the house and you can win a championship, let's bring everybody back. I didn't really think that that was possible, but they get a little bit cheaper if they decide to do so, which I think they will. $1 million. I think he's signing with the Rockets for about $7 million. And Jock Landale, we said yesterday, they kind of pushed his contract guarantee date about a week. So we'll see what happens with his deal or how they do some roster gymnastics there.
Yeah, the Clint Capella part, I know a lot of people thought, okay, wait, is this a prelude to some kind of Şengün trade or something? The most obvious answer is probably the correct one, which is that you don't want to play Steven Adams every night on back-to-back road games, et cetera, and that so now it provides you some redundancy there at center. So, and if Adams needs load management or whatever, you're not looking for Clint Capella to be the absolute ceiling version of whatever his potential was back in the day. You just want a solid veteran, and they know him from the organization and they like him a lot. It also does, I think this might finally release any of the bad juju from the Russell Westbrook era. That, you know, there was a point in this team where you felt like the only way you could possibly really get the most out of Russell Westbrook is to get rid of this this promising young and productive young center because the spacing's all bad. So, yes. So now you bring Clint Capella back in an offseason where you've actually, on the sum total of things, improved spacing because you've got more shooters on the perimeter. It just feels right. It feels right.
It does. It feels good. It feels good. I'm happy for Rocket fans. I'm excited. Me being a diehard Rocket fan coming up, since I can remember. Good morning, by the way, to all of you. I'm Sean Bajani, in for Sean Pendergast today and tomorrow. Pendergast is out for the rest of the week, and of course he is Seth Payne. Shout out to Ben Gary, producing, who always does a great job. If you want to text in, be a part of the show, 713-572-4610. You can also join the chats on YouTube and Twitch. A lot to talk about this morning, Seth. Clint Capella signing a 3-year, $21.5 million deal with the Rockets. He's 31. I had to do a double take on his age. I couldn't believe it. Just time is a warp, man. For the team that, you know, drafted him and developed him and, you know, brought him in, to see a 3 and a 1 next to his name, not a jersey number, it was kind of wild to me. And then, you know, we mentioned Dorian Finney-Smith, and probably not a household name to most of you. I mean, he's a role player. The Rockets are paying him $53 million over 4 years to be just that, a 32-year-old veteran wingman, 3-and-D guy, somebody that you wanted, or the type of player that you and I talked about yesterday, you wanting for this Rockets team.
Yeah, and I mean, the where you look at it now is they've got the top seven guys on the team just have the ability to threaten offensively in a way that you probably couldn't last year. I think the biggest concern with Dorian Finney-Smith would be he's not at the same place defensively as Dylan Brooks is. I don't think you'd feel as comfortable with Finney-Smith on guards where Dylan Brooks, you could just, you know, you can put him on anybody. But the balance is that he's a better three-point shooter.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brooks was really good shooting threes last year. He's 40% shooting threes, but he's a career 35.5% guy. So that fifth guy on the floor potentially where you have all these other shot creators out there now is a guy that's more consistently lethal from the arc but does provide you that defense too. Yeah, the only concern about this would be the four-year deal. He'll be 32 years old this year, and is that going to bite you in a couple years, especially when you still have this young core? That's for GMs to worry about, not me personally. I'm short-sighted in this regard.
I tell you what, you know, talking about that, Rafael Stone, seen this term a lot since all these moves have been made with Durant and in the couple of yesterday with Finney-Smith and Capella. Dude is cooking. And the Houston Rockets, they win signing Durant last weekend, right? Or getting him in the trade for Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks, rather. It was them launching up the odds boards via Vegas and who's got the best chance to win the title at the end of next season, the Thunder or one. And typically the team that loses in the finals is somewhere pretty close to number two, but Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers, they've got their issues. Halliburton's probably not going to play basketball at all next season. The Rockets have been number two in the power rankings, in the Vegas odds boards to win the title next year. I mean, they probably can't go any higher. They're not going to move the Thunder off a little bit. But I tell you what, like, I feel like the narrative right now is just that, hey, you better pay attention to this Rockets team. Rafael Stone, Ime Udoka, they're doing great things. They've put the rest of the Western Conference, and hell, they've put the rest of the league on notice, really, Seth, with what they've done.
No. And I think that by and large, every move they've made has been lauded really up until the Clint Capella. Clint Capella got the ESPN grades. They gave it a D+ on the Capella. That was I was kind of surprised. I was expecting a C or something. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to scroll down to see it. That was by far the worst grade because they gave the Finney-Smith signing an A-, I believe. A lot easier one to digest. Let's see. The move seemed logical a few weeks. This move, which seemed logical a few weeks ago, was a surprise after the Rockets also extended Steven Adams' contract. Adams and Capella seemed like an either-or proposition for Houston because the two players don't offer position versatility, though starting center Alperen Şengün moved to power forward alongside Adams in the playoffs. Yes. We know all that, ESPN. Really, I think the biggest part of it is just flat out that it gives you redundancy with Steven Adams. And you can splurge on the upper end of things with contracts for star players and what have you.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a little bit of a splurge for depth, which is, I like that. I like a GM that's not trying to have a top-heavy team and is just simply trying to look at the reality of it. And, hey, if Steven Adams is being load managed, if Kevin Durant is being load managed, both of those signings yesterday give you the ability to still operate more along the lines of how you need to operate when and rack up regular season wins.
Yeah.
The playoffs, obviously, the depth helps you, but especially just in racking up wins.
You know, we're going to get into this a little bit more later and try not to get too nerdy with the Rockets and usage of these players. Hey, what I think in just listening to you read that ESPN analysis of the Clint Capella signing, in that maybe it's a little redundant to Steven Adams, but we've seen under Ime Udoka and how the Rockets like to play, which I think is going to change quite a bit, and I think it has to, especially when you infuse a Kevin Durant into your offense. Let's just talk about that side of the basketball. It's that we don't really understand or know, and I don't think we're going to until these guys take the court together and Ime develops a rotation and, figures out how he likes and who works best with who kind of a thing. I don't think ESPN understands that. I don't think anybody really understands what's going on. And you can't when you throw in a guy like Kevin Durant into a team that is so young with still so full of potential, really.
Yeah. What's your personal hotspot on this team right now? The thing that still keeps you up at night when you're going through everything in your mind?
Oh boy, I wasn't prepared for that question. I don't know that anything's like quote unquote keeping me up.
Yeah, I guess that's where I just you got to guard against complacency. This is how you get burned. The one thing that pops up that you're like, oh yeah, everything felt great, and then I overlooked that one thing.
I've told you this before, and I've told people that listen regularly on Sports Radio 610 this before, is nobody was a bigger Rocket fan than me growing up. I love the Rockets, and I'd felt like my fandom was kind of stripped during the Harden exodus and all of the drama that ensued. And it was very similar to the way that I felt with the Texans when, you know, Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby jacked everything up with the Texans. It was just like, oh, you know, it's just a gut punch, and worse than that. And the last couple of years, the Rockets have pulled me back in. I get excited when I know, you know, in large part, I can get used to some familiar faces. I can look at these young guys, watch them, appreciate them, enjoying them grow under a head coach that is long for the job, long for the city, wants to be here, wants to build something great. And I'm okay with, you know, infusing a Kevin Durant or somebody that, you know, wants to quote unquote chase one last ring before they ride off into the sunset kind of a thing. They did that with Clyde Drexler, you know, back in 94, 95 when they won the second title. And so when your organization's ready, the fan base, and especially this Rocket one, like me, I feel like is starving to like their team, love their team, enjoy watching their team. And it's a different kind of relationship with your basketball team and your city when you can rep it. It makes you feel great. And Rockets just happen to be maybe filling out the trifecta of what's going on in the city of Houston right now with how competitive the Astros have been for the last decade, what the Texans are building. They're doing pretty good. They're playing catch up, and I think they've picked up the slack here quite a bit in just the last 24 hours to the last week. Seth Payne and Sean Bajani, that is me, in for Sean Pendergast this morning. Hit us up, 713-572-4610, 572-4610. Plenty more to pour over in regards to the Rockets and what they've done this offseason. I mentioned the Texans, Seth. I think the Rockets and what they've done is very reminiscent for me in regards to what the Texans have done just 1 year ago. We'll talk about that next at Sports Radio 610. And for Sean Pendergast, I'm Sean Bajani. Seth Payne here as well. Hit us up, be a part of the show this morning. React, a lot to react to with the Rockets. 713-572-4610, 572-4610. You can text the show or join the chat, Twitch and YouTube as well. I just got done, you know, kind of talking about this, the similarities between, you know, the Rockets and the Texans, at least as it pertains to me and how it's affected, you know, me being a fan and all that, Seth. But I think from an organizational standpoint, I'm kind of curious to know from you if you get vibes at all with what the Rockets have done this offseason in a very short amount of time to what the Texans did just 1 year ago during their offseason.
A little bit, just in that they're both obviously aggressive mindsets and trying to improve the team drastically. And yet, I mean, with the Rockets, it just feels much more late stage in a good way. It's that they're... This feels like you're locking those final pieces into place. With football, it's just always so much dicier with free agency and because of the number of players that it's hard to ever select, you know, like point to one position other than quarterback and say, oh, yep, there, now you got it. Now you're a championship team. The biggest difference, and it's not a criticism of the Texans. It's just a matter of where the franchises were, but the efficiency with which the Rockets have done it is really impressive. I mean, 2 years ago, the Texans, they spent a lot in free agency. They spent in trades, you know. Half of their free agency was actually trades. Joe Mixon and giving him a new contract. trading for Stephon Diggs and modifying his contract. But it's kind of like when, you know, when Correa walks into the Dior store and he likes the purse, he's going to buy it and he's going to pay the sticker price.
Yeah.
I feel like with the Rockets, you know, the Texans were kind of shopping at the Dior store. I feel like Rafael Stone waited and found the exact right, like the once every decade that the Dior store has a sale. They, you're like, okay, we're gonna spend judiciously and aggressively, but we're not gonna pay full price for that Dior store purse the way Christian Correa, the way Correa would.
Correa and Dior. No, that was a good pull.
I go to the mall and I go to the Dior store and I want something, I get it.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that.
So the Texans last year were operating a little bit in the Dior store mode. Well, this year with Rafael, I mean, he spent, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think he just waited and waited and waited for the price to come down to what they needed it to be with Durant. And then because of that, you still have all of these other assets and you've still got flexibility. That part was really the impressive part. So if I had to power rank the impressiveness of it, I would put the Rockets above the Texans. But they're both just good, aggressive off seasons.
I mean, this
2 years ago for the Texans and this year for the Rockets.
This might be inaccurate, but you know, you're talking about Correa and shopping at the Dior store and things like that. Like if the Rockets, they've spent money. It's just what they've spent money on from an NBA standpoint and what things cost now. I mean, they're paying role players a lot of money. Like,
yeah,
they just signed Jabari Smith to a 5-year, $122 million deal. That's 24.5 AAV. Steven Adams, who's going to play 18 minutes a night? I don't know. And then he's making 13. Clint Capela. Like, all of these things. I don't want to say that, like, Rafael Stone and Tillman Fertitta, they're buying good things, but they're buying good things that somebody else is kind of either used or it's like maybe a slightly out of style, like Nordstrom Rack comes to mind.
Yeah.
Or something like that, if you wanted to go that route. But the reason why, for me, I see the similarities and I liken the two together between the Rockets and the Texans and how they've built. The Rockets have been more methodical, right? I mean, the Texans, they kind of burst onto the scene once they drafted C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, they hire the head coach. It's nobody expected for them to do what they did that first year, and it was like, boom, boy, okay, now this is something that is really difficult to do in the NFL with so many moving parts, as you mentioned. Well, last offseason, you mentioned Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs. They brought in Danielle Hunter. They signed Azeez Al-Shaair. I mean, they put good, solid, veteran, productive pieces all over the field, and they had another really good season. Expectations were so high that there was a little bit of a downfall. Whereas the Rockets, we've seen now, like, this developmental process, you know, with the head coach and these young players that they've drafted at various points over the course of the last 4 years, six of their seven first-round draft picks are still intact. And now you seize the opportunity to put some great quality veteran pieces around them, and you're going to make this push. That's kind of where I was looking at this. And then, oh, by the way, never mind the fact that, you know, Nick Caserio, you know, coming from the Patriots organization, Ime Udoka coming from, you know, Boston, bringing maybe some of their philosophies or things that they've learned or found out that worked and didn't work from the Northeast down to Houston. There's that as well. That's kind of what I was thinking in terms of the similarities.
Yeah, I guess Udoka, and his lineage is a lot like more geographically diverse, I guess, than Caserio's was. Caserio spent all 20 of his years in one team up there in the Northeast. Udoka, you wrote philosophy, and at 3:30 a.m. this morning, I misread that as another.
Would you read it?
I've been watching too much true crime because I saw it as pedophiles, and I was like, "What? What? Who's the? Where are we going with this radio show? What the hell's going on?"
Boy, you had
this
like
Dallas.
Yeah. You had one eye open, and maybe not even the one eye. I was like a quarter of the one eye still open.
Yeah. I got that is a real thing, by the way. You gotta back off on the true crime sometimes. Your brain starts getting warped. I start feeling like a social worker that's been just seeing too much stuff, man. I don't trust human beings anymore. I think the sustainability part of it that you mentioned, I think that's the big part of it.
Yes.
With the Texans in the past, we've seen, okay, top heavy teams, lots of star players, future Hall of Famers, et cetera, et cetera. But you just didn't feel like they had the enough middle class players. They had too many starters playing special teams. The Texans have been built a lot more like soundly throughout the entire roster, this version of the Texans.
Yeah.
So I feel good about that. I think likewise, as excited as I am about Kevin Durant, I think the depth that they have now, that you can look at it and say with or without injury throughout the season, as long as, and this is the big asterisk, all right, the young guys got to keep developing. You know, Jabari Smith Jr. gets a 5-year contract, and I feel good about that, but I also know that he's not a finished product yet. The great tidbit that I saw yesterday was that he's still Jabari Smith Jr. is still younger than a third of the guys who were drafted this year. So, like, the upside just from a guy maturing is still there with all of that. So, the depth is there, but the development needs to continue with the younger guys. What you feel good about is, I think Udoka, kind of like it's been with Kelvin Sampson with the University of Houston, is that he's got a good feel for, I think, identifying the right kinds of guys. And I would, to go back to the Texans, I think D'Amico has a real good feel for finding the guys that genuinely love football and are going to work at it no matter how much money they're getting paid. The Rockets have that feel about them.
100%. Absolutely. Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast this morning. They're off season so far for the Rockets. They've retained Steven Adams. They've retained Fred VanVleet. Traded for Kevin Durant, signed Clint Capella, signed Dorian Finney-Smith yesterday with, you know, the report, too, that it hasn't been written in stone yet, but they're planning on retaining Tari Eason and Aaron Holiday and Jeff Green. Jeff Green linking back up with Kevin Durant now on his third team. They were together with the Seattle Supersonics going way back, the Brooklyn Nets, and now with the Houston Rockets as Durant comes in. I saw something from Brad O on Twitter. He had it last night, but I saw it this morning. You're talking about like this roster. Look at the wings and the athleticism that the Rockets now possess. And this is what I kind of go back to when I'd said in the first segment, Seth, nobody knows how the hell that Ime Udoka is going to put all this together and use this. You just know he's had a very skilled, athletic, talented roster, and we've started to kind of see it come together. And now you add even more to it. It's yes, depth. It's great quality depth. But between Amen Thompson, DFS, Cam Whitmore, presently speaking, because he's still here, Tari Eason, Jabari Smith, Kevin Durant, they're all at least 6'7" to 6'11" guys and all offer very different things for Ime Udoka and however he decides to run this offense.
Well, and I think, you know, you're kind of jokingly mentioned what Steven Adams' minutes might be this year.
Yeah.
I think there is a tendency for us to look at Steven Adams as older than he actually is.
It feels that way.
He's a big man, and big men don't generally age that well, but he's going to be 32 this year.
Yeah.
And I think we're a little skewed by the fact that you kind of forget, oh, yeah, he is coming off a major injury, and he did end up in the playoffs. He was playing anywhere between 17 to 20 to 31 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Like his. Yeah. I think he's going to be closer back to what he's been in his career, which is a 25, 26 minute a night player. But with Capella now on the roster, they've got the ability to not maybe, you know, during the regular season, maybe more games off, but more heavy usage in games when he's playing, or you can just reduce his minutes. But I think there's a potential that they use him more heavily in the regular season this year, but more than anything, they just want to be sure that, yeah, he can give you 25 minutes when we need him to in the playoffs.
I mean, well, in the playoffs, that's kind of where my mind was going with the versatility that the Rockets have right now. And then obviously, you know, I don't want to say protecting, maybe conserving is the better way to say it in regards to Steven Adams with the Clint Capella addition now behind Alper and Şengün. In that playoffs, you're playing the same team potentially 7 times, within a week and a half, 2-week span, you're not game planning for anybody else but the opposition. And it's very matchup-based, matchup-oriented. Teams are going to throw different things at you and see what sticks. The Rockets have the ability to go too big, one big, no big. They can go small. They can go super heavy with the size and athleticism, the rim protectors. It's going to be almost an embarrassment of riches. Knock on wood, Seth. if in fact, like, these non-old guys that, outside of Durant, who's old, but outside of these guys that we maybe think are a little bit older than they really are, if they stay healthy, this could be a really interesting and versatile, you know, roster for Ime to work with.
I think this is the thing I'm bracing myself for, or at least warning myself against, is that it's rarely as seamless as it seems on paper when it comes to improving an offense or anything else. Yeah. And there's certain things you, hey, it's easy to do kind of the player analysis and the box score analysis and say, well, yep, you plop Kevin Durant in there and everything's that much better immediately. But we've seen, hey, you put Kevin Durant with the Golden State Warriors, an already great team. It took them a while to figure it all out, everybody was operating offensively. Go to Tom Brady going to the Bucks. They looked rough when he was first there, and then they got it figured out. So I'm guarding myself against being overly disappointed if it's not the greatest show on hardwood offensively the first month or so. There's still work to be done.
Well, you know, you're right. It's not like the Rockets offense was as inefficient as the Texans offensive line was last year, right?
Yeah.
And so to say that, well, you know what? It's at least going to be better. But there's an element to that. At least it's going to be better. Like, now they've got that go-to guy. Now they've got a guy in Kevin Durant that can score from three, that can score from mid-range, that can still take it to the rack, and you've got other guys that he can dish it off to, which we'll get to a little bit later, and maybe what to expect and how the Rockets are going to play stylistically on offense and who's going to carry some of the load or most of the load. But getting back to what you asked me, caught me off guard last segment when you said, you know, what's one thing with the Rockets that kind of keeps you up at night?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a solid answer for you, but I think maybe the only answer somebody on YouTube had, and it was, I think it was Israel. It said, Cam Whitmore. Cam Whitmore is probably the only guy. Not that he's keeping us up at night, but that's the one thing that still is a question mark right now with the Rockets, in that you don't know if he necessarily is going to fit, and some of it has to do with him personally and how invested does he want to be with this organization, with this team still. And there's a larger element that exists with, hey, he's 20 years old and Ime just cannot grab that will, that effort out of a young, talented, skillful guy in Cam to play the defense regularly that he wants him to.
Yeah. Now that we're sitting here talking about, like, wow, yeah, look, they bolstered or at least restocked the depth, and look at how good their top seven are and how you've got different options. And hey, by the way, let's play with two centers in the game as much as possible, especially when you got Kevin Durant, who himself is 7 foot tall on the floor. We do find ourselves in the same old boat with Cam Whitmore, which is, yeah, where exactly are you going to put him? And like, how many minutes are you going to give him? So it's not one that makes me worry about the Rockets systemically, but it is a potential drama and headache scenario. The soap opera element is still there for Cam Whitmore.
Yeah, well, he's, to me, and look, the guy that could answer, like, how's this all going to work and fit together best is my brother, Ali Khan. You can catch him on Twitter, at Rockets Insider. He understands what the Rockets have done and are likely to do offensively better than anybody. He put together an excellent breakdown last week whenever they brought Durant in with Kelly Eco and some other guys on an excellent podcast. But it's, for Cam Whitmore, an excellent backup. If Durant, God forbid, you know, goes down for an extended period of time without injury, who needs buckets? Who could fill it up? Cam Whitmore could be that guy. And if he steps his defensive game up as well, you feel a lot better if you're Ime Udoka about trusting him to play, you know, 20-some-odd minutes a game versus, well, zero that he played towards the end of last season. He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. 713-572-4610 if you'd like to text in, be a part of the show. Coming up next, we'll get you caught up on a lot of other news and headlines. Plenty of other action in the NBA and the Astros. Well, they're going to play baseball again tonight. We'll get you caught up on that as well. Stay there at Sports Radio 610.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. First up on headlines, we'll start with the Astros this time. Talked a little Rockets to start the show, and more on them later and throughout. But the Astros, after an off day yesterday, Seth, take their 50-34 mark to Colorado tonight. Colorado's 19-65. one of my favorite stats.
They're just so bad.
You know where
it's
I'm
amazing.
Going. One of my favorite stats is that the Astros won as many games in 26 days last month in June as the Rockies have all season. Astros went 19-7. Rockies are 19-65. Colton Gordon tasked first pitching against Chase Dolander tonight.
Yeah.
With not being a massive disappointment in giving up a game to the Rockies at their place.
Credit to the Rockies. I know for the first part of the season, I kept just marveling at them being dead last in runs scored and while playing half their games in that altitude. But now they're third from last. So good for you. The Royals are the current champions of not scoring runs.
Oh, yeah.
Colton Gordon's an interesting one. It's strange because... good performance the last time out, but his ERA is what, hovering up around four or so?
No, it's sub four now, 3.98.
Is it 3.98? Okay, good. And you can count on him pretty consistently over the past four games as he'll give you five innings and he's not going to allow more than two runs. That's what he's been in the month of June.
The month of May,
his first start, he went less than five innings. But he'd given up at least three earned runs in each of his four starts in the month of May. But he tamped it down to where, all right, I don't fear the implosion. I'm much more fear an implosion with Lance McCullers right now than I do with Colton Gordon. But the upside of Lance is still much higher than Colton Gordon. But I trust that he's going to go out and at least give you five innings of just passable baseball, and then the bats take care of the rest.
That's the expectation, and. You know, you feel comfortable with that after an off day. And the way that Fromber pitched on Sunday, you know, Abreu gave you two innings. Josh Hader closed it out for his 23rd straight save to start the season. So everybody in that pen coming into tonight is going to be available for the Astros. That's one. And then two, yes, look, expectations. It's okay for a guy named Colton Gordon that you didn't know his name, 2 months ago. Or even if the guy existed, many of you, gives you five quality innings. I contend the way that Major League Baseball pitchers are used these days, five innings should be a quality start. It's a Bijani quality start. I tip my cap to those guys that go five and give up two or three or less.
I like the Bijani quality start. You can lower the bar for a quality start. So a quality start is six innings pitched with three or fewer runs, earned runs allowed.
Right.
With Colton Gordon, my quality start for him is five innings, two runs allowed. It's a higher bar in terms of just the runs per. But that's what I. Okay, yeah, the quality. No, I can't reduce all my standards. So if I'm going to give him five innings, just give me five innings of two runs allowed, and that's a check plus quality start for Colton Gordon.
Astros have won six of Gordon's last eight starts, only eight starts this season for Gordon. The big news, the big question is, man, who's the next guy up for the Astros? Because you heard the audio from Ron Hughley going into the break that Jeremy Pena was announced yesterday has gone on the injured list. 10-day IL. The soonest he can come off is July 8th. He is with the team in Denver, but he's just there, and he's going to be kind of trying to do some things to kind of gain more flexibility.
Sleeping in, they brought a lazy boy for him to sleep in. Sleeping is the biggest challenge for broken ribs, it seems.
Oh, Dana
and
Brown.
Laughing. Don't laugh or sneeze.
We'll get to some Dana Brown quotes later on, what he had to say in regards to Jeremy Pena and how he's going to help him feel better. He sounds pretty wacky, Dana.
I don't know if you remember, but there was once a shortstop with the Astros, Sean, who had a rib injury. And it was pretty notable. Ended up spawning his wife's YouTube career or bolstering it by going on with an explanation of how Carlos Correa broke his ribs at the hands of an overly aggressive massage therapist. Nobody believed that story then. Nobody believes it now. But that's neither here nor there. 50 games.
Yeah, she whooped his ass.
Correa missed 50 games with a broken rib. So that's the worst case scenario would be that. Now, this was merely a baseball hitting. And okay, it was a breaking ball, too. So it wasn't like a 98 mile per hour heater or something. This was merely a baseball and not a massage therapist that broke Jeremy Pena's ribs. So Are you optimistic that he, when he's eligible to come off in July 8th, that he's actually going to be playing?
For God knows what reason, yes. I'm optimistic that he's not going to miss a month and a half. Because here's the thing. My guy, Will Kunkel at Fox 26, formerly Fox 26, has a source that says Pena should only miss a couple of weeks. But the couple of weeks, from an individual standpoint, it's a feel thing. Like you mentioned, the pitch that he, you know, is injured on because of, it was a breaking ball. It's not a 98 mile per hour heater, you know, in the ribs for a guy that, you know, maybe could be a running back in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's stacked. He's built. He's a big dude. He's like Damian Pierce up there. I don't know. It's a feel thing.
Yeah, but you know how that goes, man. It's just like, you know, that special little tool that can break a windshield. You just all it takes is just the right hit in the right spot, and it could be a
true.
All we know at this point is the fact that they put him on the 10-day IL would suggest that it was like the rib wasn't sticking out of his jersey or anything. It was hopefully just a nice and simple fracture. We have such bad luck over the course of the last calendar year plus a couple weeks of the Astros saying that something's no big deal. It turns out that it's a break, but no, don't worry, it's not a big break. But it keeps either Kyle Tucker or Yordan Alvarez out for weeks and weeks and weeks.
The baseball gods giveth and then they take away. Literally before they even giveth, you know, they get the news that hey, Yordan Alvarez is going to be headed to Florida on Sunday to start taking some swings against actual major league pitchers, other major league pitchers that are also Astros that are also presently hurt but are rehabbing. And then, boom, no sooner do you get that news that Pena's going to be out maybe for at least the next week or so, which, look, it's probably going to be closer to the couple of weeks that Kunkel says, according to his source, and here's why. July 8th, that puts him back in the middle portion of that Guardians series. Okay, well, there's only like 4 days remaining before the All-Star break. Why not just keep Pena out those extra 4 days, give him the break, he comes back fresh, there's no need to rush. And we didn't get to this yesterday, obviously, because we found out later, but if this was going to happen, Seth, now's might as well happen now, because you're so close to the All-Star break, and you've built now what is a six-game cushion between the Astros and the Mariners in the AL West. Hell, they put out their like Uber getaway day lineup on Sunday with Fromber on the mound, and they won a ball game 2-0. You know, they've won 2-0 ball games with Colton Gordon, Brandon Walter, Jason Alexander on the mound. It doesn't matter. Like, they can make do. They've built themselves up enough cushion.
So, yeah, I've gotten very arrogant about their ability to withstand injuries. It's at some point there's theoretically a breaking point, but I don't know.
It's the whole
at any given moment Bryce Matthews might show up and hit 20 home runs.
It's the whole Astros are inevitable thing that breeds that arrogance. A lot of other NBA free agency news and trades. We've covered the Rockets. They brought in Dorian Finney-Smith, a 3-and-D guy for 4 years, $53 million. Clint Capella, 3 years, $21.5 million. More on them a little bit later on, but some other stuff that went down yesterday. The money, Seth, the money. The Grizzlies extended Jaren Jackson Jr., 5 years, $240 million. I did not know this. Jaren Jackson Jr., at the age of 25 this past season, became the only player to record 1,500 points and have 100 blocks in a season. He had a really nice year, 22 points, 5 boards, 2 dimes, a block and a half, and almost a steal and a half over 74 games played. The Mavericks doing big things. They signed point guard D'Angelo Russell. Okay. the Denver Nuggets trading Michael Porter Jr. and unprotected 2032 first-round pick. Keep track of that one, Seth. A 2032 first-round pick goes to the Brooklyn Nets for forward Cam Johnson. And then Brook Lopez, a guy that the Rockets... you know, at least a lot of people thought the Rockets were going to be interested in. Brook Lopez signed a 2-year, $18 million deal with the Clippers. So there's your NBA news. And Mike Brown might be the head coach of the New York Knicks at some point in time. He's got a second interview forthcoming. We'll roll into the 7 o'clock hour, and we'll switch gears a little bit, talk a little Texans. C.J. Stroud has sought inspiration from abroad this season. We'll have some audio for you next at Sports Radio 610.